Get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Welcome to Animal House. I'm your host, Dr. Clayton Greenway. This is the show where I invite you into my appointment room and take your questions about your pets. I've been practicing veterinary medicine for over 20 years in Toronto. I've completed advanced training in orthopedic surgery, emergency care procedures, and internal medicine in dogs and cats. So this hour is a great opportunity to get your pet vet questions answered. The phone lines are open, so give us a call. 416-872-1010 or text us at 71010. If you're calling long distance, 1-877-518-5151. But more importantly, I'm here to help you. I'll give you honest answers so you can make the best medical decisions for your pet. I love helping people who love their pets, so give me a call. We get lots of calls, but if you call in early, if you call in now, I can guarantee that I'll get to your question. The phone lines are open, 416-872-1010 or text us at 71010. And as always, I can promise my listeners one thing. If you care enough to call in, then I'll care about your pet and give you the very best medicine I can deliver.
Now, what seems to be the problem? You can tell me. I'm a vet tuner.
All right. That's how we like to start the show. Okay. There was a headline that immediately got my attention. For anybody who listens to the show, you know that I'm a big proponent of keeping your dogs on leashes. And if you've been following the show, you'll also know that there has been a rise in the number of dog attacks in Toronto. I don't really understand why that is. I don't know if it's a holdover. My best guess is it's a holdover from COVID and so many people getting dogs. I still don't understand why it's still such a problem, and it definitely is on the rise. And so the city is responding, and I love that they are. They're really working at it and doing a very good response here. Owners of dogs deemed dangerous in Toronto can expect a visit from city staff under tough new measures being implemented in the wake of a number of severe dog attacks in the last 2 years. Starting this week, staff are expected to visit all dog owners who have received dangerous dog orders, the city said in a news release on Wednesday. The visits, which will continue into May, will be prioritized according to the severity of the behavior of the dog in question. There are currently 373 dangerous dog orders in place. For anybody who doesn't know, a dangerous dog order is placed on someone who owns a dog that has bitten someone. There's been a biting incident, and it can either be minor or major. And you basically have to have either two minor bites or one major bite to get a dangerous dog order. Owners will receive a standardized warning sign that must be posted on their property and will be reminded of the requirements of dangerous dog orders. According to the city, owners of dangerous dogs must muzzle their dogs when they are in public, obtain a dangerous dog tag, ensure their dogs are socialized properly, make their dogs undergo obedience training, and not allow their dogs to go into off-leash areas in Toronto. The sign that must be posted, which includes a QR code, reads in part, "Warning, dangerous dog on premises." The QR code leads to the city's webpage on dog bites or attacks. The city's also created a public list of dangerous dogs on its open data portal. I've actually gone to that list. Doesn't have the name of the people, just has the prefix of the postal code and kind of the description of the dog. Doesn't tell you the address, though. The list includes the first three digits of the dog's owner postal code, their ward number, the dog's name, breed, and color, and the date of the dog attack that led to the order. Councillor Paula Fletcher, who represents Ward 14, said on Wednesday that she pushed for a review of how Toronto Animal Services handles dog attacks after a woman in East York was seriously injured in a mauling by two dogs last July. There's really there has been some really bad dog attacks recently. Since that mauling, there have been two more high-profile dog attacks this year. In March, a boy was left with life-altering injuries after being bitten and dragged by a dog in Little Norway Park playground in Toronto's Harbourfront area, and a woman now faces charges. In February, a woman was seriously injured after being attacked by two dogs while she was waiting at a bus stop in Rexdale. Man now faces charges in connection with that attack. It looks like we found after these three attacks was that the bottom line was that people with dangerous dogs were not following the order. They weren't doing what was right. You know, some of them removed the sign, removed the tag. They just didn't care. And there was a re-offender as well. And I think that that's what this big push is about. And I think it's absolutely critical. City Council decided in March to increase enforcement, create a public list, provide a warning sign. Toronto Animal Service investigates all reports of dangerous dogs acts. In 2023, it says there were 2,726 service requests for potentially dangerous dog acts, an increase from 2,653 in 2022. Of the 373 dangerous dog orders, the city said staff estimate that about 10% of the orders were related to a very severe injury or mauling. Councillor Alejandro Bravo, who represents Ward 9, said in a statement on Wednesday that she secured an additional $800,000 during the city's 2024 budget process for increased enforcement. That's really fantastic. That's what we really need. And I cannot say enough. You've got to keep your dog on a leash. Somebody texted in and says it should read dangerous owner. And I can't agree more. That is the issue. It's not the dogs, okay? And we're done with this breed-specific bans. These things, they don't work. Really, it's the owners. And that's why we need the dangerous dog orders, basically. And we have to have more penalties for these people. They have to follow the rules. You know, repeat offender is just, that can't happen. Because you've got this dog, you know it's dangerous, you know that it's bitten before, the owner doesn't have control. Something has to be done about that. Okay. You know what? Let's get to the phones. This is a step in the right direction, that's for sure. For anybody out there with questions, give us a call. 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go. Oh, boy. This should be an easy one. Adriano, am I saying that right? Adriano, you've got a two-year-old corgi poo. What's going on?
He's a healthy little guy. And he's all caught up in his shots, and he sees his regular vet. What he's been doing now for the past, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 months, is he likes to lick his anus.
Yep.
And he does that on a regular basis. I mean, he.
Well, there's a lot of people. If people could do that, some people would never leave the house.
Okay, then I'm not going there. And then the other part of this is he likes to drag his butt around it like it's itchy.
He puts it on the ground and he pulls it along.
Absolutely, and this is it's just fairly recent. Like I say, last 3 or 4 months. Is there something I should be worried about? Something I should maybe see the vet about?
Yeah, do you know, have you seen the vet during this time at all?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, there's a clear reason why it is. Do you know why it is?
No, I don't.
Okay. Time for the anal gland talk. Basically, there are two little sacs at the back beside the anus, and they're called anal glands. And what's happening with him is he's having irritation of them. In fact, they're likely full. What they do is they fill up with sort of stinky fluid, if it's not already stinky enough. And basically, when they have a poop, it puts pressure on these two little glands, these two little sacs, and this fluid kind of comes out and laces the poop, okay, to make it even more stinky. It's like a territorial marking. And what happens is these anal glands, they get impacted. The fluid doesn't come out. So instead of it being the consistency of something like milk, it starts to dry up and it's almost, it thickens up like pudding. and that becomes very irritating. And so they lick at it, they drag their butt on the ground. This is exactly what's going on. So what you need to do, so what you need to do, there's a couple reasons why it can happen. If you have soft stools consistently, that can fill up. Most of the time, there's no reason for it. Some people say it's allergies, but people say everything's allergies, so I don't believe that at all. So there's a couple reasons why it can happen. The most important thing is you know, you take them to the vet and they express them. Okay, they get rid of the contents of them. They look at the contents and make sure it's not infected or irritated. They may put them on an antibiotic. And probably what's important is that you know, when they express them, they may not express them 100%. So you want to go back in within, I don't know, a week and probably have another expression done and just get rid of it all. And so then it becomes a question of when do they fill back up again? Are they a problem again in a few weeks? You know, is it recurrent? And that becomes a different story. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I mean, you hit it right on the button.
Yeah, for sure. That's what's going on. Now, if you want to be brave, you could buy a glove at the drugstore and do it yourself, but I don't recommend it.
I'm definitely not going to do that. Is there another option as far as maybe an oral pill type thing you can give them or
not? Not really. Unless it's the stools that are soft. I mean, how have the stools been? They've been normal?
They've been fairly normal.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's been, a normal stool.
Yeah. There's nothing orally. I mean, you could give them a higher fiber diet, try to bulk up the stool. This stuff doesn't really work, though. You know what? No real rhyme or reason. I mean, I even had a cat that had impacted anal glands. I mean, it only happened like 3 times in its life. And who knows? This stuff just happens. So you take them to the vet. You tell them you need an anal gland expression. You can call ahead. If you're really lucky, if you've been there, if you really want to try to save some money, you could call and see if you could see one of the technicians and have them express the anal glands. This will avoid, you know, what you can do is call, tell them the problem, go in for anal gland expression, and see if you can get out of paying a whole physical exam fee. Just do that first, and then, you know, you're just paying for the expression. You're not paying the $100+ for the exam, and that's it. That's going to save you some money, okay?
So you're saying, like you actually said, that I could do that?
If it becomes more of a problem, you can have someone show you, but very few owners take me up on that offer. Anyways, good luck with that. I've got to go to commercial break. Give us a call, 416-872-1010. No problem. You're listening to Animal House.
How much is that doggy in the window?
To interact with veterinarian and pet expert Dr. Clayton Greenway, send your text to 71010.
Welcome back to Animal House. Hope you're having a good time this morning, and thanks for coming along with us. If you've got a question, give us a call, 416-872-1010. I just got a text. I thought I was the one who just came up with bad jokes. Here's a text from someone who was responding to the anal gland, the dog with the anal gland issue that's licking itself. A husband and wife see their dog lick himself. The husband says, "I wish I could do that." It's just jumping down here. The husband says, "I wish I could do that." The wife says, "I'm sure if you asked him nicely, he would let you." Okay, that got my attention. That was funny, I think. But, you know, I only know bad jokes, so I'm really not so sure. All right, let's go back to the phones. Give us a call, 416-872-1010. This is really interesting. David, your vet is retiring. What's going on?
Yeah, hey there. Thanks for taking my call. So
sure.
We've had the same vet for 15, 20 years now, looking after all our pets, and he's hanging the gloves up. So
okay.
We're in this kind of awkward position where we're looking for new vets, and along
so
the way,
this vet has been it's been a great vet for you.
He's been perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let everyone. I'm curious what his name is and his clinic. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it, and I think that's wonderful that you're saying that about him.
Yeah. So that's Dr. Gerald over at the Mitchell Animal Hospital in Kitchener.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah, no, that's great. So you're wondering how to find a new vet.
Yeah, so, like, what do we look for? And you know, how do we kind of have those conversations about, you know, is this the right fit for us?
Right. You know, it's interesting. There's a couple things I would say. I mean, you can start in the dog park. You can, you know, definitely Google reviews. You can basically just... You know, one of the things I've always recommended is that people should call a clinic, leave a message and say, you know, I'd like to talk to the vet. I'm thinking of being a client. And I have to tell you, that's a good litmus test for me, because I remember calls like that. It's been a long time, and I don't think people really do that anymore. I think the vets don't really spend the time. Not many vets spend the time answering that call. But I think it's really important. And if somebody, you know, you leave that message at multiple clinics, if somebody calls you back, that means they care. It means that they want to talk to you and meet you. And that to me is a really good way to start that off. But at the end of the day, you know, your relationship with your vet and how you interact, are they open to your kind of medicine, considering your wallet whenever you're talking about problems? That's what you're really looking for. And that doesn't really come out until the conversations happen. But that's where I would start.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, one of the things I really liked about our current vet is that he didn't overprescribe, right? He was very much a wait and see kind of guy before, you know, we elected for medication or procedures.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm looking for going forward. So thanks for the advice.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for calling in. That is a really good point. And I have to say, I actually had an interview the other day with a news reporter who's doing a piece on veterinary medicine, on the cost of it, on the cost of prescriptions. And it's left me sad because people are seeing these prices go up and up and up. There's a big reason for that. Unfortunately, it is manufactured. One of the things that has happened is that these consolidators that have bought so many clinics, they bought them all on debt. The interest rate went up. They've had to restructure their debt. They're in very bad shape, even though there's so much demand to go to the clinic. And so one thing they've done is they've done price increases. There are clinics that have done 4 or 5 price increases in a year. And this particularly pertains to corporately owned clinics. And you wouldn't really know the difference. Doesn't really have a sign on the door for some of these corporate clinics. There's one from the States, VCA. You'll be able to see those, but they weren't as affected, that's for sure. So the price increases are really in the other ones that you can't really tell whether that's your clinic or not. And maybe people are realizing this. And, you know, this idea of what he just said about the wait and see approach, this just doesn't happen enough anymore. And, you know, I'll tell you why. One of the things is you know, I used to do this all the time, is I used to say, listen, if we can't afford the diagnostics, let's do some treatment and see what happens. What that entails, though, it entails a real responsibility on the vet's part to get back to you. They can't let a problem persist. They have to check in. They have to call back. And these days, that's just... The vets don't really put themselves in that position as much anymore. There's lots of good ones out there. But nowadays, where there's locum usage, there's not a consistent vet there, you don't get that. I want to say you don't get that dedication there, but you don't get a vet who's got the schedule to be dedicated to your pet. And basically, you know, doing some treatment and seeing what happens is very dangerous to them, because if it doesn't go right, they didn't do the diagnostics. They agreed with you not to do the diagnostics, and they can get a license complaint. That's what they're nervous about. I don't care about license complaints, but I'm telling you, every vet in the world, they are terrified of license complaints. And on our licensing body is very serious and hands out very strong punishments. And it is a fear of every vet out there to get a license complaint. And it is really frozen people quite a bit. And, you know, it bothers me that, you know, when I would practice, it was, I'd do everything and I'd keep the pet and I'd take care of it and I wouldn't refer and all this sort of stuff. And this stuff happens too quickly, too often, and too soon. And I don't know how that's going to change. I don't think it will. Hopefully, as the consolidators come back that own so many clinics, hopefully there's a push behind this and there's a little different philosophy that starts to weed its way into veterinary medicine to get back to where it was. Anyways, wanted to mention that to everyone. It has really been on my mind a lot and just bothers me quite a bit. I don't think it's good for the industry. I don't think it's, you know, we've always had a wonderful reputation. I think that's changing a bit. And it's sad for me to see. Anyways, give us a call if you've got a question, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go to Samantha. You called in really early. You've got Oliver, 5-year-old Yorkie Terrier. Are you going to be our poop call of the day?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go have at it, Samantha.
All right. So I'll make it quick to the point. So Oliver, I adopted him just over a month ago from a shelter in L.A., second
yep.
dog from the same shelter. Second dog with also poop problems. And I don't want to go down the same road. Not only you don't want to see them go through it, but it cost me $30,000 last year for Abigail.
Oh, so, God.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, I did have, I listen to your show every week, and I listen very intently, and I asked for, you know, like find out what bacteria, what are we dealing with, what is going on. So he did find a parasite. So
yep.
I've been treating it with the antibiotic the last 2 weeks and the probiotic. And
so it's what is it, Giardia? Is it Giardia?
No.
Really?
I can't remember the name.
Can't remember?
It's a long
really?
Thing.
Okay.
Yeah. But he did say it was a low level.
Low level. Is it a parasite or a bacteria?
Parasite.
It's a parasite, eh?
Correct.
Well, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Okay, so how's your dog doing now?
So it poops firmed up a little bit, but it's not normal. It's still
okay.
not normal. So
something's odd here. Something's odd here because there is a parasite called Giardia that we treat with an antibiotic. Okay.
Right.
The rest of the parasites we don't treat with antibiotics. We treat with antiparasiticides. And so And the other thing is, the thing that really bothers me is that it's really rare for a parasite other than Giardia to cause diarrhea. I mean, you can get them in very young dogs where you've got a really big parasite burden and you got this diarrhea. But this bugs me. Something's not, to me, adding up here. And so how long has this diarrhea been going on?
Since I brought him home. I went and flew down and got him, brought him on the plane back with me, and it's been ever since.
Right. And when was that?
A month ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I would certainly finish the treatment, see if whatever this parasite is still there. So if there's something else, I would also do something called the 4DX test. What that is it looks for tick-borne illnesses, okay? Because if you rescue this dog from another geographic area, for sure, that can be a concern. Adopted him. Okay. I do hate rescue. I was surprised that you caught me off guard there because I'm like, I don't like using the word I hate rescue. I hate that word. You really do listen to the show. Anyways, I would do a 4DX test for the tick-borne illnesses and then also potentially do a culture and sensitivity of the stool that will grow whatever bacteria is there. But something, I don't think I'm just concerned that maybe the right thing isn't there and there's something else in the background. I've got to run to commercial break. Thanks so much. That was a good moment
Thank
there.
You
caught me really good. All right. Take care. Good luck with that. All right. For anybody else, give us a call. 416-872-1010. You're listening to Animal House.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Get the answers you need now. Contact the show by calling 416-872-1010 or text 71010. You're listening to The Animal House with Dr. Clayton Greenway on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Welcome back to Animal House. As I always say, listen to the radio and then take the dog for a walk. If you've got a question, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. I don't know what's going on here, but I am the one who makes the bad jokes. There's somebody else who texted in after this discussion of the anal glands and dogs licking themselves. They said, I don't know why dog food has so many fancy flavors. My dog, they should just make bum flavor. That is disgusting and hilarious. And anyways, I don't know whether these are funny. I can't make a good joke, so I'm not even sure. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's still stick around the back door here. Valerie, you've got Hugo, 10-year-old standard poodle. You're a little concerned about his prostate.
Yes, yes.
What's going on?
Well, last October he started having some difficulty defecating, pressing, and a little sort of a thin, not a proper formed number
right.
two. So off to the vet, and they checked. They thought everything was normal. They said everything was normal. And so January, still the same, went back to the vet. Our veterinarian did another sort of probe and said that he had an enlarged prostate.
Okay.
So off to the specialist. Hugo,
oh,
by the
boy.
Way, was neutered when he was 7 months old.
Mm. Okay.
So we off to the specialist where he had his ultrasound, inconclusive for cancer, because I think the vet thought
oh, boy.
Cancer. Anyway, inconclusive. And then back the following week to take a sample, also inconclusive.
Wow.
And now we're in this position
wow.
of Hugo, who is still having a problem defecating, but enjoying life,
yep.
eating, playing, happy, sleeping, no other really serious side effects other than the terrible straining that he has.
Now, what
pudding.
Have you seen any blood in the urine at all?
No,
ever?
Nothing.
Okay,
ever.
Now on urine tests, is there a higher number of red blood cells?
They,
have you noticed that?
Yes, they said originally when they did the urine test that they
right.
there was a higher number, but they also thought there might be some bacterial infection.
Okay.
So he was on a course of antibacterial after the ultrasound.
How long?
Probably 2 weeks.
Okay. You know, it's time for someone to make a decision about treatment. So if you mm-hmm. get inconclusive, I mean, let's do something. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, it's interesting, right? You did this case. Clearly there's an issue going on. There's discomfort. There's difficulty with, regular, maintenance here. And so the thing is, someone has to make a decision about treatment. This is one of the things about veterinary medicine now. It's nobody really jumps into that. And,
mm-hmm.
That's what I would be doing. And so basically what you've got is either prostatitis or prostate cancer, or you've got benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is
mm-hmm.
very strange for a neutered dog.
Mm-hmm.
So what options do we have? Well, one is an antibiotic. And so you tried one before. It could be good to try another one. But usually mm-hmm. when you're treating prostatitis, you have to treat it for like 6 weeks on an antibiotic. Usually it's
okay.
quite a long time.
Right.
I would try something like that.
Yes.
Granted, you just don't know, but if there's blood in the urine, it means that there's reaction there. If there's a cancerous change, then there can easily be infection along with it. That can
mm-hmm.
definitely, if you remove a bacterial component, if that's going on, which is suspected at this
mm-hmm.
point, it can reduce the size of the tissues. It can reduce some of the swelling and reaction. So like,
mm-hmm.
let's go for it. What's wrong with doing an antibiotic? Going further than that is starting to get a little pushy. You could be starting to give a drug that is not really helping and may have some other effects in the body. Something like a steroid is possible. And I hate just throwing that out there because steroids is something you really shouldn't give unless you know you've got to give it. But if there's relief here, you have to start making that judgment call. And so there's places to go with that. And it sounds from the urine analysis that would be a good path to take. And I don't know which antibiotic it was, but there are ones that are more particular for prostatitis mm-hmm. and infections in the prostate. That's the next step. And I would basically push the vet to say, no, look, we've got to treat this. Let's treat this.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was on an anti-inflammatory which we had two prescriptions of that Metacam, I think it was called. And it seemed to help a little bit. The vet said, try a stool softener, but we kind of didn't really necessarily think that was the best thing because he doesn't have... He doesn't have a problem with the poo. It's just getting the poo out.
Yeah, I want to, you know, the anti-inflammatory, it's not really treating something that could be going on there. I really think you should do a longer run of antibiotics that's targeted for prostatitis. Okay. And you could do the anti-inflammatory at the same time. But basically, you know, once you get to the point where this is a real problem in his life and is clearly, you know, a big issue. I mean, you've got, you know, a 10-year-old dog. If there's a discomfort level, that's where I'd go to bigger guns, even though we don't know 100% whether it would work. Someone has to take that chance, and vets just don't, they don't tend to do that anymore because they worry about license complaints and things like that. So I'd have that conversation. Okay.
Well, I will do, and thank you very much. That's
okay,
really,
no
really
problem.
Helpful. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Doctor.
No problem. All right. For anybody else, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we'll help you out. I like that call. I feel like I can make a difference there. Blair, you've got Minnie, a five-month-old multi-poo, and oh, what a pain in the ass. The teeth aren't coming. The baby teeth aren't coming out.
Yeah, she's about 5 months old, and we just had a vet visit the other day, and the vet said the bottom canine teeth, I think that's what they're called, the longer one.
Yep, yep.
The adult teeth are kind of growing in beside them, and they're not coming out. he said give it another month, but I'm wondering if you have any tips or if you have any issues for me getting in there and removing them like I did with my kids.
That's it's they can be really in there, the baby teeth, and typically they are, particularly in this type of breed. Has your dog been spayed or neutered, or are you planning that?
We're planning it, in about another 2 weeks.
Yeah, so obviously the vet would have said that's when they take them out, right?
I wasn't at the visit, but that would be my push.
Yeah. So basically, under the anesthetic, they go ahead and for like an additional extra little fee, and it really is pretty modest. Hopefully, they'll pop them out, and there's really no, you can't tie a string around these things. They go from fat to thin. It really is important to remove these because they'll totally change the conformation of the mouth and definitely would cause discomfort. So it's as simple as you see what happens. You could, you know, I guess from a home remedy standpoint, you could give, like, I hate saying this advice, but harder things to chew on. I mean, I don't like saying that because harder stuff to chew on is not good for the teeth. But if it's something that's sort of got a soft outer part, like a really hard rubber type of thing, that might, you know, it might get the teeth moving a bit and along the way of where they're supposed to go, which is to come out naturally.
Gotcha. That's the exact second opinion we're looking for, and a great tip for the toy to try and see if they'll work.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Give us a call, 416-872-1010. This is all about breeding. These tiny little dogs, this is just, you know, it's one of the things. Breeds, you know what? If you tell me a condition, I'll be able to guess the breed. This is very common. And I have to say, just because I really like this lesson, is that, you know what doctors should do for us? Is the first visit you ever go to the doctor, I've never had this happen, but the first visit you go to, there should be one question they ask you. It's the most important question they should ask it every time in that first visit. It should be, what did your parents have as diseases? Because you're going to get it, okay? My parents had gout. I had gout when I was 16. You're not supposed to get that until you're old, fat, eating red meat. I didn't even eat meat at the time. We cannot fight genetics. And so when it comes to breeds, when people talk about food and what food to feed, you know, you should look at the breed of your dog. You should look at your cat and say, what do they get? I feed my cat a dental diet because I know they're going to have dental issues. You know, I don't just feed a regular diet. Feed a food that is meant to treat something in your dog. You can always ask your vet about that. So if you have a young dog and you're starting on a food, consider that, and it will help your wallet in the long run. All right, I've got to go to commercial break. For anybody else, give us a call, 416-872-1010. You're listening to Animal House.
To interact with veterinarian and pet expert Dr. Clayton Greenway, send your text to 71010.
Welcome back to Animal House. Thanks for listening. I wouldn't be anywhere without my listeners. If you've got a question, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Let's go back to the Colts here. This is interesting. Margaret, you've got Cayenne, 7-year-old Maltese. What's going on?
First of all, your jokes are great. Every Saturday, you have to have a doggy joke before you start the day. I giggled my head off. Now, done with my dog. Help me, please. I'm really, really worried. First of all, I do not understand blood work and blood tests. I do not understand how to read it. First of all, I took Cayenne over to the vet, and they did some blood work.
Yep.
Because I'm preparing for her to have her dental cleaning, which was supposed to be done in February, but canceled. Okay, so I did that. The vet called, and she said, oh, there's a problem. So I go, okay, what is it? She says, protein's too low. I'm going, okay.
The protein's too low.
Yeah, low. Okay. So
Did they give you the numbers?
I have all that. I do.
The other thing it says here is that I'll try to focus you, and I want you to be specific about what the issue is. So low protein, and then they also, it says here, a urine test.
Yeah, I did a urine test, which was the second thing to find out to eliminate any kidney issues, and there's no protein in the kidney. So I go back to the blood work, and it shows total protein 43.
And what's, and ratio, remind me of the normal range?
55 to 75 GLs is what they're saying.
Okay.
So then they say the other one, albumin 19, the ratio is 27 to 39. But then there's another one here that I don't understand. It says 117.3. It starts with R, R-E-T-I-C-U-L-O-C-Y.
Yeah, that's the reticulocyte count. That
and
is
something about a young red blood cell. That's 5.3. So I'm really concerned. Now, the vet is out of town, and she's going to be back in on Monday.
So let me ask you this. What did the vet say they're going to do about this?
She said on Monday we're going to discuss it. She says at least we're eliminating a kidney problem. But the thing is, my dog is happy. She's running.
Yeah.
She's playing. Everything is okay.
No diarrhea, nothing like that.
No, she's she's a bit of
I have chased protein changes many times in my life, and there are outside the normal range dogs. And I don't know this for sure. Okay, I can't say this over the radio. It's a little dangerous to say this, but you know, there are you've got to treat the dog, not the data. And so you have to look at this and say, yes, they have a good response by the fact that there's low protein level. They're worried about protein losing disease somewhere.
Okay.
But you've got a very healthy dog. So certainly the kidneys can be a source good for them. They checked it. It's fine.
Yep.
The other thing is, you know, where else do you lose protein? You can lose it into the digestive tract.
Okay.
You would have to have some sort of digestive issue. You'd have diarrhea. You'd have gastrointestinal issues. You could be losing it. Here's the crummy one. You could be losing it into the abdomen if you have a mass or cancer or something like that. You start saying that and it's like, oh my God, what could be going on?
That's what
You've
I
got
mean.
A healthy
I'm
dog.
Going nuts.
Yeah. What, you know, here's the thing. What you can do, I would say, is look, you can do an ultrasound of the abdomen, which is very expensive. Probably overkill for the sake that there's just a low protein level. It can be rechecked in, you know, 2-3 weeks, see what it is then, see, trend it just a bit to see is it still consistent or is it getting better on its own? You know, one thing that can happen is you can have intestinal parasites where you don't have diarrhea and you could be losing protein. There could be a, you know, an antiparasitic treatment that can happen, which is really cheap, inexpensive, and not going to cause a problem with the dog. Might as well consider that.
So you do a stool sample. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Doing an ultrasound is probably overkill. Probably check the protein level again. The other thing is I don't think you're going to have any problem with anesthesia. But you just want to know, you know, is this a disease state and is there a problem? You can go blind trying to chase these things. And, it's very possible that this is just your dog has a, you know, have you had blood work done many times before?
I do blood work, be the fact that, like, I keep her on the tick and heartworm medication year long. I don't go just...
I would just check if there's been protein levels done before to see,
there was.
You know, were they low before?
It was
were
low,
they right on the edge of low?
Up.
Yeah, so I think that's just your dog. I think that's what's happening. I've seen this with protein levels before. That's my input. But still, you know, I have to pull back to the safety zone and kind of say it's still good to look at, to look for. But if you've seen somewhat low normal to just under normal protein levels before, I think that's just your dog, and that's the normal range that it keeps.
So is that 43? Is that very, that's bad?
I wouldn't say it's bad. I mean, it'd be bad if your dog is sick. Right.
Not.
And so that's right. So the thing is, you've got to respond to these things the proper way. So they did a good job. They're looking, but I really think, you know, at some point you've got to sort of say this could be normal for this dog. And I've seen that with protein levels before. So I think they need to just, you know, do another check of it. If it's coming back to the normal range, I wouldn't think about it again.
Okay. Now what about,
let me schedule
for May the 1st for her dental cleaning. Do I cancel
they'll
that?
Call you, obviously they'll check in and they'll call you and see what the vet has to say about what they want to do. I think the anesthetic's going to go fine.
Okay.
It's going to go fine. I don't see the protein value being a problem. But, you know, so that I'm not worried about. Just getting this kind of out of the way is really what the next step is as to whether we call it normal or there's actually a reason for it in a very healthy dog. That's very unlikely. So,
okay.
Anyways, I'll leave it at that. Thanks very much for the call and
thank
good luck
you,
with that.
Thank you, and keep those jokes coming
yep.
in.
No problem. Stop. Thanks. For anybody else, give us a call, 416-872-1010, and we will help you out. Okay, I got time for one more call. Let's go. Who needs some help here? Okay. I guess the person who has been waiting the longest, it looks like Janine, you've got, oh boy, you've got a six-month-old kitten and a seven-year-old husky, and what, they're not getting along?
No, I've had her since third week of November, and I've tried everything, and she's just being a kitten.
What's everything?
Well, I tried the slow introduction, separating them.
Sure.
Trying to give equal time and equal play to both.
Yep.
There's a jealousy issue, but it's also the kitten's being a kitten, and she wants my husky to be a kitten. She jumps on her head. She jumps on her face.
Oh, okay.
And, the husky just does not want to have any of it.
So the husky is stressed out because of it?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. She literally appears depressed. My neighbor literally just saw her face right now. She's like, oh my God, she looks depressed.
Yeah, but that it's very easy for us to anthropomorphize emotions
in
the dogs and say, you know, I think the dog is just getting bothered a bit by the cat. I think they will work it out. I mean, at 6 months old, this is going to calm down. And I don't think these things necessarily, just kittens are like crazy off the wall energy or very little of it. I really don't think you have to rehome the kitten. I think you'll find that they find their groove. It's better for them to have each other than not. And if there's not a safety issue and not, you know, injury going on, then I wouldn't be worried. There's a couple things I would consider, though. You know, really try to wear the cat out with a play period with, like, you know, a laser or something where you sit on the couch and just do half an hour getting the cat running around. Also, up high, places where the kitten can go to get up high and look down on the dog. It might prevent some of the interactions as much, and then also plugins that are for anxiety for the cat. It might calm it down, but it's a 6-month-old kitten. It's supposed to be like this. So
let me
leave you with that.
Everything.
They will work it out. I promise. I don't think you need to get rid of this kitten. I appreciate it. And for everybody else, thanks for listening to the show. And if I didn't get to your question, call me first thing next week when I'm doing my intro, and I'll definitely have you on. Be good to your pets.
Dogs and cats
living together. That's hysteria.